This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Projection on window film is one of those things that I thought had come and gone from digital signage, with too many technical challenges to make the idea really workable. But projection is having a comeback, and arguably the company doing the most with it for retail and campaign-based marketing is a scrappy little startup in Dallas called Glass Media. I chatted with Daniel Black, who founded the company roughly 5 years ago. The big difference between the first wave of projection and signage and now are better technology and smarter vendors. The film is better, the projectors are brighter, specialty lenses mean the setup takes less space, and the big one, laser projectors are supplanting older style projectors that steadily needed expensive bulbs replaced and they weren't engineered for commercial applications. The other factor is guys like Black selling this as a solution, with measurables for retailers and brands as opposed to a technical thing with short-term wow factor. If you've been curious about the state of projection in signage, this is a worthwhile listen. So Daniel, tell me what Glass Media is all about. We've met a couple times and I've had a demo, but you're still reasonably new to the signage market.
Yeah, absolutely. So for us, we kind of took a hard look at the state of physical brick and mortar retail and realized that most storefronts remain quite stale and antiquated. So if you think about the common marketing techniques used to engage vehicles and passersby, brands and retailers are still using everything from paper posters to vinyl wraps, neon signs, like poster stands, sandwich boards, et cetera, et cetera. So for us, what we really specialize is in highly unique, custom tailored digital storefront activations, and really with three objectives in mind. Through kind of the wow factor, our goal is to drive incremental walk-ins, drive engagement and brand awareness from the exterior, and ultimately conversion, right? It's all about sales and revenue. And so we do that through projection, as you stated. And I'm sure we'll discuss over the next 30 minutes kind of why projection is unique as opposed to LCD and LCD. But we've definitely found a lot of success in that to date.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's been around for a good 15 years. I remember 3M had a product called Vicuity, and a lot of people were making noise about how this was going to be a big deal. The idea that you would put film on a window, project onto it, and people on the sidewalk would be able to see it. But it never really went anywhere. And I got the sense that the biggest things were, A, that the projectors were expensive. The bulbs were high maintenance. You had to replace them pretty regularly. And the film had its limitations as well. And I was at first a little bit surprised that companies were coming back into the market with technology. But, you know, having chatted with you, I got a better sense of what's now going on and what's different. So maybe you could go into that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So 3M discontinued the Vicuity film, I believe, in 2014. And since then, there's probably a good, I'd say, 40 or 50 manufacturers globally. So we've actually, we've tested almost every film on the market, and we really look for three things. We look for viewing angle, optical clarity, and color uniformity. You really, you know, hit the nail on the head with this one. One of the biggest problems with projection historically was the fact that they weren't commercial grade in terms of 24/7 operable. And because they used bulbs, the unit economics made no sense because they'd have to be replaced every quarter if you were running them, you know, pretty hard. And bulbs were never meant to be run more than 16 hours a day. For that reason, the same thing with filters. The filters we have now with laser projectors can run 24/7 for years at a time. So, you know, that's why a lot of companies weren't really able to successfully scale this technology is, you know, it couldn't run 16/7 or especially 24/7. And the unit economics to support these systems was far, far more expensive. And, you know, from a CapEx or even an OpEx standpoint, no retailer could really justify the expense.
There was also issues around where you would place the projector, right? Like it had to be pretty much head on, and it would take up a lot of space inside of a store unless it was, you know, in certain cases, an empty storefront.
Yeah, so there's been a number of improvements. First and foremost is definitely form factor. So projectors historically, you know, were pretty large. They've definitely gotten smaller and brighter over time. And in terms of sophistication with, you know, feature sets and capabilities, there's definitely been huge improvements in everything from lens shift to horizontal vertical keystone, the native ability to stack or edge blend or even do corner correction or warping. So over time, I mean, the projectors are definitely getting smarter, which is helping. Just because when you look at, you know, interior environments for retailers, there's three different types of ceilings, right? We have open ventilation, drop ceiling, and drywall. And there's lighting fixtures, HVAC all over the place. So it's definitely helped us from, I guess, an ease or modularity of being able to place the projectors where we'd like, as opposed to 5 or 10 years ago, really being forced into a complicated situation, so to speak.
So in lay terms, is it now possible to use a projection system and a lens that will largely be out of the way and won't consume a lot of space?
Correct. So companies like NEC, Panasonic, Epson, for instance, some of their commercial grade hardware now have swappable lenses. So with a lot of these projector chassis, you can choose up to 12 different lenses, ranging from ultra short throw or even a fisheye lens where you can put the projector, you know, a mere 2 feet from the glass, all the way to an ultra long throw projector used in an auditorium that could be, you know, 30, 40, 50 feet away. So there's definitely a lot of flexibility. And one thing that we've really developed is visualization software. And so what we've done is we put all the spec sheets for all the projectors in the software, and it really helps us automate our bill of material. And while we're working with construction teams on new store buildouts, for instance, in real time, we can kind of move the projector and see exactly kind of how we can maximize or minimize its placement, whether that's keystone, throw distance, et cetera, et cetera.
Are you making compromises when you're doing that, though? If you use an ultra short throw projector, is that going to affect the visual quality? And ideally, you'd like to be, you know, using a proper lens, or not a proper lens, but a more conventional lens?
So it's a good question. You know, one of the issues we still have predominantly with ultra short throw is you kind of have some warping that you can't get rid of in the corners. The thing for us is typically we're not projecting native shapes. So we're not doing native 16, 9, 10, or 4, 3, which means we don't really have to worry about those warping negative externalities. With that said, you know, one thing that most companies still haven't figured out in the projection space is the appropriate brightness parameters. And I think that's really one of the biggest shortfalls right now in projection is no one understands how many lumens per square feet or square foot are appropriate, based on, you know, whether a window is single, dual, or triple pane, whether it has a tint, a low E treatment, or a triple silver coating. And so what we find often in projection is in places with high ambient light or direct sunlight, there's a lot of glare and washout, and it kind of creates more of a down brand experience. So we're one of those companies that really try to maximize brightness to ensure effective viewing angles and an on-brand experience both during the night and during the day.
So it sounds like there's a lot of science involved here, probably more than a lot of people really realize.
Yeah, absolutely. For us with building all this software, there's a lot of calculus, trigonometry, definitely a lot of that behind the scenes.
And that's been a knock for a long time with window displays, projection displays, is great for evening, great for overnight, but in the middle of the day, as you described, it gets washed out. You're saying that if you do it right, this can be counterbalanced and you can have something that's going to pop in the middle of the afternoon.
Exactly. Yeah. And we have proof of that, you know, all over North America. For us, the big thing is eliminating scope creep. So of course, to get the effective luminosity, we usually have to pitch a smaller display, right? So if a retailer comes to you wanting to project on their entire window or something that's 20, 30 square feet, usually it's about, you know, repurposing or restructuring that conversation and educating them on kind of the balance between budget and kind of scope of work.
And do you really need a full picture window illuminated, or can it be just as effective with, you know, print graphics and something that just sits in a portion of that window?
Yeah, so that's definitely an important thing to consider, and we definitely have data on it from a conversion standpoint. You know, for us, we're not fans of just throwing in traditional digital signage in a storefront window. Flat screens have been around since 1997, and it forces content to be king, which is often a bottleneck for retailers. Mm-hmm. For us, it's really all about things that are highly unique. And with projection, we have the ability to project any shape. We don't have a bezel. There's no wires between the projector and the film. So again, it's all about the uniqueness. And if you can create something unique, you're going to force someone walking by to stop looking at their phone and probably engage with whatever the content is for a few seconds. And that's really our goal.
It sounds as well like you're doing die cutting or laser cutting or whatever of shapes, and only filling a portion of a window and letting the light in and letting people see into the store and letting people in the store see out. Is that accurate?
So the films we use they're opaque, so they're not transparent or semi-transparent.
Right.
So our solutions are really meant to drive engagement from the exterior. So we mirror the image so it's to be seen from the outside. At the same time at night, depending on how much texture you're using, you certainly can see it from both sides. There are a few companies in the, I guess you're familiar with the active liquid crystal space.
Mm-hmm.
For them, those films are opaque as well, but they can switch between being semi-transparent with a slight haze and being opaque and projected on. The number one issue we found with active liquid crystal is that they still have a refraction problem. And so you get a lot of light bleed and pollution going backwards from the display. And that's really the reason we haven't been able to commercialize it for our clients, is we can't have abstract content bleeding onto the rear walls. Just so we can have an image, you know, facing the exterior of the storefront.
Yeah, you're basically talking about switchable glass, right?
Correct.
And yeah, when I've seen that at trade shows, it's a cool application, but it certainly doesn't have a lot of visual pop. Like it seems muted.
Yeah, and most of those companies, I know Gauzy well, who works with Avery Dennison. It comes down to lumens per square foot, right? So often they're using an ultra short throw projector that only has 6,000 lumens and they're projecting like 30, 40 square feet. It certainly would look a lot better if they use the appropriate brightness. But again, factor, the projector gets larger, the activation gets more expensive. So that's where you walk a fine line.
Where are you putting these things in? When the first kind of wave of this stuff tended to be in empty storefronts where they could set the projector back enough that they could fill a whole window. And the objection that I would hear, at least from companies like retailers in particular, is you put this opaque film on my glass and nobody can see into the store. And I need people to see into the store and see, you know, displays or whatever it may be. So how's it working now?
Yeah, so in terms of kind of our clientele, there's really three silos. So we work with, traditional retailers that have a presence either in exterior, like outdoor and indoor malls, or kind of hip neighborhoods like Soho, New York, or Chelsea or Hudson Yards, for instance. We're also starting to do a lot in premium outlet, as well as with pop-up retail. What we find is the majority of our activations, typically our displays are in the top half or top third of the window. So we don't actually, get rid of that viewable space.
Okay.
At the same time, we work actually very closely with visual merchandising teams. And so the goal for us is really to figure out the appropriate placement where they can work around it, whether that's with new fixtures, placing mannequins, or, just product showcases. And the nice thing is for us, we actually have another solution called a recessed acrylic, where we can take a quarter inch or half inch sheet of acrylic, we can CNC or laser cut it in any shape, and then laminate our films onto it. And by doing that, we can actually suspend the display above and behind the glass. So if you do have mannequins, we can actually create more of a digital backdrop as opposed to taking up that storefront real estate and forcing everyone to work around it.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I've tended to make fun of through the years are what I call talking flat ladies, where there are these sort of virtual mannequins with, as you described, a film on top of them, and they tend to use really cheap, crappy projection systems, and they're there to do a repetitive loop, like welcome you to an airport or tell you to take off your belt and shoes at the screening line.
Sure.
Has that improved?
So we actually just came out with a new product. It's been R&D for a while. So we just got into 3D vacuum forming. So one of the problems with kind of that experience is it's a person on a 2D substrate, right? So
yeah,
for us now, we're actually able to create a 3D sheet of acrylic and use a sprayable liquid crystal as the film. And I can send you some videos of comparing 2D and 3D from our R&D lab, and it's pretty substantial. So I think part of the reason is if you're trying to bring a human being or virtual human being to life on a 2D surface, it's going to look really phony. If you can kind of create a little bit more of the 3D aspect and, again, get the appropriate brightness, I think it certainly helps. I don't think that's kind of a space we're trying to play in, but I certainly understand where there's improvements to be made.
Mm-hmm. So how do end users engage with your company? How are they finding you? And is it direct or are they going through, like, do you have a bunch of channel partners?
Yeah, it's a good question. So for us, the majority of our business remains, direct B2B. We meet most of our customers at trade shows or through referrals. A little bit on LinkedIn. We just launched a blog and we're doing some kind of videography highlighting some of the stuff we're working on. In terms of our channel, we're starting to work with a number of different partners. So we're now an Intel Market Ready solution. I really appreciate the endorsement of Intel's visual retail team. We're working with companies like NEC and Epson. We're also starting to work with a lot of agencies of record, fixture design firms, retail architecture firms. So we certainly work both direct and through channel.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
One of the things that I saw when 3M was still in the space, they were marketing the idea of merchandising level micro displays in fridges and things like that using Pico projectors. Pico or Pico, I never quite know how to say that. And that's another thing that didn't really go anywhere. Do you see an opportunity at the right at the shelf and or merchandising table?
Yes. Yeah, so we recently have got into what we refer to as projection-based augmented reality, where we're actually projecting on 3D objects. One project we're working on in kind of the jewelry accessory space is projecting on forms. So it could be a neck form with virtual jewelry. It could be a hand form. And we're actually building modular setups utilizing Pico projectors and front surface mirrors. So the goal in some of those activations is how do we hide the hardware? And create kind of this modular jewelry tray where all you see is the form and the digital kind of layer on top of it without seeing any hardware whatsoever. The issue we've had first and foremost with Picos is they're not really smart projectors. So that's why we do work with companies like Cortronic and Delta that OEM them. Just because in terms of RJ45, RS232, Picos were really just meant for people to take on the road with them. Meetings for us, it really helps for us to, from a firmware standpoint, to talk to the motherboard. And so I think over time, certain Picos will get smarter. But there's definitely been this trend towards, there's a company in San Francisco called Lightform.
Yep.
Just came out with the LF2, which is like a 1 or 2,000 lumen projector. And Epson also has the Lightscene, which is a 2,000 lumen projector. And so I think in dark rooms and for smaller activations, there's certainly a place for lower lumen projection, but I still think it's a bit early for the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've met with the Lightform guys and seen the demos and everything. I was kind of curious if you consider them a competitor or are they a supplier to you?
Yes, we definitely have their software live for a couple demos in our office. certainly wouldn't consider them a competitor. I think where we're going to work well with them ultimately is, other than the LFT they just came out with, they're really a software company. Mm-hmm. The problem is the audience they're talking to, which oftentimes are artists, have no idea about brightness parameters, right? So the concern that we have is that they're selling this software to people that don't understand how to make an activation look really good during the day or in high mm-hmm. light environments. And so it's kind of this give and take, but certainly respect what we're doing or what they're doing. We've used it in a number of different capacities. And so we're continuing to explore that and see how they improve their software.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like some of the secret sauce to making this work for your company is getting away from being a vendor, so to speak, and being much more of a solutions provider, somebody who can provide insight and expertise.
Correct. So, you know, we have designed our own content management system that was designed specifically for projection. With channel partners, we have the ability to leverage any CMS on the market as well. So, you know, from an ecosystem standpoint, we certainly can play in the same sandbox as everybody. One thing that's exciting for us is we've actually been in development on our own line of front, rear liquid crystal projection films, as well as a sprayable version that will come out probably in March of next year. And really the reason we've done that is we've gone a lot more into projection-based augmented reality, and there's really no good rear projection or front projection sprayable liquid crystal out there. So that was one of the reasons 2 years ago we set our own goal of kind of creating our own. Then with regards to projection films too, for us, there's definitely better ones on the market, right? There's probably three or four that we think are better than the other 40 or 50. But we're really excited about what we're coming out with. It's definitely going to be a global leader for sure.
Now, are you doing that just because it's more tuned to what you need, or that's just part of the business plan that rather than buying a third party, you'd rather have your own?
You know, it's interesting. Part of it's definitely for branding. Projection films, you know, Vicuti was extremely expensive. It was like 60 to 80 a square foot. They've come down a lot. I mean, now you can buy really good projection films for, you know, close to $10 a square foot, if not less. For us, definitely quality. Our films have the best optical clarity and color uniformity, which is really important to us. But I think, you know, like I said, what we're doing in projection-based augmented reality, if you project, for instance, on a white shirt, the colors are going to be a little bit muted. For us, if we spray our liquid crystal onto a piece of clothing first, it really pops. And so, like I said, we partnered with a recognized chemist years ago, and we've been in development for about 2 years, and we're finally almost at the finish line, which is pretty exciting.
Without getting too technical, I'm trying to wrap my head around sprayable liquid crystal. Is there a way to explain that mere mortals like me will understand?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, typically we use a projection film that is usually on a piece of mylar, for instance, with an adhesive backer. The difference is when you're dealing with warping or 3D objects, the question is, like, you can't wrap a film, right? Because it'll rip. And you'll get air bubbles, et cetera, et cetera. So there's actually a company in South Korea called PaintPam they have a sprayable liquid crystal.
Okay, I've seen PaintPam.
Yeah, and so, you know, we've tested, like I said, you know, 50 plus companies worldwide. For us, we just need a product, especially for the higher end retailers we work with, where the quality is really, really good. And so that's really what we've developed, is something, even a Tiffany & Co. or a Louis Vuitton can be proud of.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we talked about when bumped into each other at NEC Showcase or something like that, was you were talking about how projectors are evolving, and with time, you're going to see the form factors really shrink down to being kind of lighting cones and lighting fixtures, as opposed to these big suitcases that are hanging from a ceiling.
Yeah, so I mean, most projector manufacturers are excited to eventually remove the laser housing from the chassis itself. If we're able to do that, like you alluded to, we can hide the larger portion and just kind of embed it into a light track, so to speak, which you can currently do with the Epson light scene. The form factor is still pretty good, but the issue is it's still only 2,000 lumens. When we have the ability to do that with something that's, you know, 6, 8, or 10,000 lumens, it really changes the game. But I mean, there's a lot happening with projection now. I think in the coming years, Intel has their OPS, which is kind of just a way to plug a PC into, you know, any commercial grade digital signage.
Yep.
I think we're certainly going to see projectors having built-in, you know, OPS in the coming years, which will be really important because companies like us currently that use the Intel Nook have to hide it somewhere, whether that's in a custom enclosure above the ceiling, et cetera, et cetera. So that's certainly going to help. I think a lot of companies now are really getting into the interactive gamification kind of side of things with projection. I don't know if you've seen the Joyride trial experience at Nike on Fifth Avenue, but a really cool way for people to try and choose and kind of project on the floor and have a gamified real-time experience. I think a lot of companies, we're working with a number of brands and retailers right now on interactive projection experiences. And I can tell you there's a lot of larger retailers right now that are very interested in floor-based wayfinding, where you can project onto a floor and whether you're showcasing where the bathroom is or cross-sell upselling batteries and telling someone to go to aisle 14. I think the floor graphics historically, you know, haven't been the best in convenience stores and Walmarts, for instance. And so there's definitely a lot of interest in digitizing the floor in some capacity.
Yeah, that's fascinating because the whole interactive floor thing is something else that's been around for, man, at least 15 years, probably going on 20 years in some respects. And the early iterations, and I still see the iterations like this, are they're largely novelties that only attract the interest of kids who can run around and kick virtual balls and all that. And I've always wondered, why are retailers and shopping mall operators doing this? And the idea of addressing some common issues like store navigation makes so much more sense.
I agree. And I mean, the other issue we've seen with scalable interactive experiences in general is just content creation and campaign development is a huge bottleneck. There's a few partners we work with that, you know, make these gamified experiences, and they have hundreds or thousands of different types of games that we can white label. Definitely a lot of progress there. One of those companies is LumoPlay, which is out of Canada, actually. They do a great job. So, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing we've seen, even with interactive storefronts, right? There's ways to do it with computer vision. There's ways to do it with using the smartphone as an extension of the display. Or even with, capacitance films, right, layered into the glass. The problem with all those experiences is just the retailers don't have the content. And that's why a lot of times you don't see those solutions or activations scaling. They're more of a one-off PR piece, so to speak.
So with any kind of display technology, we're seeing a smarter buying audience. They are beyond just the novelty of something. Oh, look, that's cool. Look, it's projecting on a window or whatever. They want to know, what am I going to get out of this? So when you get asked about ROI, what do you tell them?
Yeah. So I think that's one of the biggest shortfalls of digital signage over the last decade is most traditional digital signage companies have largely focused on a qualitative approach, right, to customer education. They talk about bezel thickness, the weight of the screen, resolution, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We're definitely one of those companies that first and foremost, we started with the quantitative side of things. So we're looking at correlating, you know, door traffic counters with the point of sale with mobile offers. There's ways for us to do or integrate mobile sensing technology where we can actually track how many people are walking by a storefront and correlate with that, how many people are walking in. So our goal, first and foremost, like I said, in the very beginning of our conversation is threefold. Our objectives or KPIs are driving brand awareness and engagement, walk-ins, and conversion. And so if you look at that from an analytical or quantitative standpoint, using the door counters, using mobile sensing, tying into the point of sale, we really can show an ROI or measurable ROI for all of those. And working with some of our customers, I mean, Fossil, for instance, we're in over 41 stores now. They've had a double-digit lift in store traffic. For us, you know, those are really the KPIs we focus on. And if we're successful in driving more people into the store, we're obviously going to see an increase in conversion as well.
Sure. You're originally from Toronto. How did you end up in Dallas with this company? And what are kind of the roots of the company? Why'd you start it?
So I was born in Ottawa, grew up in Toronto. My dad's a pediatric heart surgeon, so we ended up moving to Silicon Valley when I was 10 in the grade. So for me, I ended up out of college. I went to Claremont McKenna College in Southern California. First job was in lead generation and online marketing in San Diego. And I lived downtown in a condo and walked to work every morning. And I'd pass by probably 20, 30 small businesses, everything from dry cleaners to coffee shops. And I realized every day that they were all using the same neon sign, the same paper poster, the same chalk sandwich board. And, you know, from an online standpoint, I'm A/B testing content every day, right? All I'm trying to do is optimize campaign performance and ROI. And so I kind of got thinking, well, how do we do that through some type of digital or dynamic storefront? And shortly thereafter, I visited a mall and realized that whether you're a, you know, a mom and pop dry cleaner with one location or your H&M with hundreds, they both really have the same stale and antiquated storefront experience. And so that's kind of when the light bulb went off, and prototyped it in San Diego, and then made the decision to move to Dallas about 6.5 years ago now. So I've been here for a little while, and the startup community is wonderful here. It's very different from the Bay Area or New York. And so that's kind of how we got our route started.
Bootstrapped, or did you get outside funding?
So originally we bootstrapped. I started a few businesses in college, which helped us lay our foundation. And after that, we've raised a few million dollars, mostly from angel investors. A couple family offices have supported us, and we're at a point now where we have a number of VCs that have approached us for a larger round. And so we're definitely weighing our options on the opportunity cost of organic growth versus inorganic growth, and what we feel is going to be best for our team and our stakeholders.
I would have imagined 6.5 years ago, you'd have had people within the digital signage industry and AV industry saying, yeah, that's been tried and it didn't work. So why are you doing this?
Yeah. So the company, we started about 4.5 years ago here in Dallas. You know, absolutely, there were definitely people saying that. Our goal was, the proof was in the pudding. Once we started getting activations and, our pipeline grew and the number of customers grew, people start to see what we're doing works and they become interested in it because it is unique and a little bit different. We certainly, you could argue, probably started a couple years too early, right? The market right now for digital storefronts in general is growing quite rapidly. But at the same time for us, that gave us the ability to really build a moat, build better software, develop our projection films. And so for us, we've really invested in the future. And I think the next, 2 to 5 years in terms of retail digital storefronts is pretty exciting.
How many people do you have working with you?
So our core team is only 5 full-time. We utilize third parties for just about everything. So software development's here in Texas. We use third-party deployments for deployment. So site surveys and installations and
sure,
what have you.
But I bet you're sitting on top of most of this stuff.
Yeah. No hardware hits our office, right? It's all shipped and kitted and it goes directly to site. So we've definitely figured out how to create a very scalable business with not a lot of overhead. Mm-hmm. That certainly bodes well for us just because, next year everyone's a little bit concerned of a potential recession. And so for us, we love remaining scrappy where, for us, even a 30 or 50 store deployment is a huge win. Whereas for a company like Stratacash or Four Winds Interactive, they got to be closing those on a weekly basis. So it's just perspective.
Right. All right. Where can people find your company online?
So if you go to www.digitalstorefront.com, you can certainly learn more about us. And if someone wants to write the contact page or shoot me an email at daniel@glass-media.com, we'd love to connect with them.
All right, Daniel. Thank you very much for your time.
Of course. Thanks a lot, Dave.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.